This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hundreds of flights canceled over the Memorial Day weekend, stranding lots and lots of people, some scurrying still on Tuesday to get on flights. Also over the weekend in Uvalde, the dead from the massacre that happened last week, this sad, sad tale of too many young children, 10 years old, losing their lives inside of their elementary school just days before they were supposed to be let out for summer vacation. They started the wakes and funerals for those children and still want answers as to why the response time wasn't much quicker than 40 plus minutes while there were kids in the classroom with the gunman calling 911 and asking for help. A big box office opener on the lighter side, so to speak, Top Gun Maverick, after decades, really cruises as far as the movie opening is concerned. I think people wanted something to feel good about, and this was the movie to feel good about. The EU banned Russian oil as the squeeze gets just a little bit tighter around Russia's proverbial neck. Will it matter? Maybe. It's now been months and months since February has come and gone, and Russia invaded Ukraine as they try to take over the eastern Donbas region. Lots and lots of fighting between Ukraine and Russia in that particular area. I'm Kate Delaney. Thanks so much for joining us on this version of the show. And we start with Uvalde and the fact that, you know, what is happening there, because so many of you have asked me and you're talking about it. I say that this show is about the virtual water cooler buzz. What is it that you're talking about? Whether you live in a small, rural, wonderful town or a big city or a suburb, wherever you live, it doesn't matter. But people are talking about the tiny caskets, the town burying those kids, the grief, looking at it, hearing all the stories about it, then the catastrophic mistakes made by police, and what does that mean, and could more people have recovered, and what ultimately should have happened there that didn't happen there, and what is the Justice Department going to come up with as they launched their investigation. Then we have, as that's happening, the grief over that. We do have something that would affect some people, I would think, in our audience. Organic strawberries are the likely cause of this hepatitis A outbreak, not just in the United States, by the way, but in Canada, too. It is, it's consumers, restaurants, retailers. They could have had these strawberries. These are the organic strawberries branded as Fresh Campo or HEB. If you pick them up between March 5th and April 25th, you know, you go get a bag of it, throw it in the freezer, whatever. I mean, this is fruit that was sold nationwide in some very popular grocery chains. The Aldi's, the Safeways, the Trader Joe's, the Walmart's, all of that. I mean, hepatitis A is something you do not want to get. There have been at least 17 cases reported, 15 of them in California. And then 12 people at least at this point have been hospitalized with this virus that is a horrible, horrible thing, and sometimes very tough to come back from because it can cause liver failure and death. And it happens, especially depending on the age of the person. So they're investigating the infected strawberries and as to what other products could have been included, because who knows? There's lots of different things that this could have been included in. And produce can become contaminated with Hep A if it's handled by someone infected who has not washed their hands properly. That's always a big thing. Washing food in dirty water also leads to that kind of infection. When I lived in California, I knew a family that had one of the biggest, in Santa Maria, California, one of the biggest strawberry fields, and they were very, very careful, or tried to be very careful about how the strawberries were handled because of concerns over what could happen between the strawberry picking and cleaning and shipping it off to the various locations of, you know, where it was supposed to end up. So for some, this is worrisome, and obviously if you've got them, get rid of them if it's not too late. And hopefully it isn't too late for anybody listening to this show anyway, as far as that's concerned. There is conversation about Hurricane Agatha, which is why I'll bring it up briefly. It was downgraded to a tropical storm late Monday. It did make landfall in southern Mexico, Cat 2. So that's 70 miles an hour. That's the wind gusts. Some of them were that high. And it hit just west of Puerto Angel, or Angel, some would say, but it's Angel. It was 105 miles when it hit there. So hurricane warnings were discontinued, but tropical storm warnings were in place for Puerto Escondido and some other spots that are pretty popular for Americans and others to go and visit. Heavy rain, but not expected to affect the United States because it's supposed to dissipate, and it looks like it's doing that right now. I just looked at a weather map just a short while ago. So there's the good news there, that it is dissipating. I'm going to mention this because at one point I realized that I've interviewed this coroner. His name is Jeff Gladney, and he went to TCU, and I, of course, was in Dallas. And he was a cornerback for the Arizona Cardinals. Sadly, he died in a car crash on Monday morning in Dallas. He was among two people who died in that crash. Happened, you know, early in the morning, like around 2:30 or so. But the NFL is reacting, and people who knew Gladney are reacting to his death. He had a big career, I think, in front of him. He played at TCU. I mentioned that the Vikings drafted him as a first-round pick in 2020. They released him in front of the 2021 season, and he ended up with the Cardinals. They had signed him to a two-year contract in March of 2022. So he had been training with the team during their NFL's organized team practices. And, boy, really, really sad to hear that story because he had, well, from what I understand, he had really gotten his life together, and there was a lot of upsides for what could happen with his career. And it was one of those kind of weekends, some strange things happening, like the Mona Lisa. There was a man who acted as if he was wheelchair bound, and he threw cake at the Mona Lisa. Some people were thinking, wow, how damaged is it? But there is actually glass in front of the Mona Lisa, and you can't get too close, and now they'll probably make it so you can't even get that close to it. What a quirky, strange thing to happen. All right, coming up next, a conversation with author Beryl Witten. Hang with us.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses too. Go to mysolarbackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's mysolarbackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at mysolarbackup.com.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scented hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
Guided tour. Beryl, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
What drove you to write this book? What made you write this book?
God told me to write it.
And when you got that calling, you just answered the bell and started writing and it just poured into you?
Actually, you said it just like it happened. When I heard the voice inside of my head, the voice said, get up and write your book. Well, I got a legal pad and some pens, and I sat and sort of waited for it to happen, and it seemed like a voice just went off in my head with dictation. So I wrote down what I heard.
And when you started writing, what did you hear? Tell us about the book.
Oh, all right. I'll tell you about the book. Let me tell you how I got started. Actually, I was a Bible teacher. I was teaching Bible classes, and I had a special group. There were five of us, and we agreed that we wanted to know God. We wanted to know a God that was not mean and judgeful. We had church backgrounds, and we knew the God that was mean and judgeful, as it were. We studied a book called A Shepherd Looks at the 23rd Psalm, and we discovered how the shepherd just loves the sheep. We knew that God referred to us as sheep. So we decided that we wanted to know God, and in that foundation, I believe that that's where it came from, because I just wanted to know God.
What do you think it is that people have trouble with, that they have trouble believing or even understanding better? What do you think it is?
I think the fact that they have been taught that God is mean and fearful, and that makes them afraid of God. They have been taught that God is way off somewhere. Moreover, that they have to measure up to some standards. The standards are documented, of course you know that. And because you can't measure up to the standards. So that's how come people from knowing God.
Hmm. What specifically do you like about the book? What's your favorite part of this book? I mean, you're going to say the whole thing, but there's got to be one place.
Well, I think the one thing that I like so much about the book is that right in the middle, inside of God, I was standing there thinking something, and that moved me into a place that was a theater. Actually, it was a real big theater. Resplendent with people. There was an orchestra, and you could hear the music, and the people were, I learned later, that the people were everybody that I didn't know, and then there were people there that already knew me, people that saw me and didn't identify me. So as I began, I was in this theater, and I was on the stage. I saw all of these people, and when I looked at the people, there were row and rows of people that I did not meet yet. Those people came up on the stage. When I looked at them, they got out of their chairs. They began to scurry around. They came up on the stage, and they walked right through the stage to the back of the stage, and they walked out into the future. Those people were going out into the future so they could be there when I got there so that I could meet them. And, Kate, you were in that bunch of people because you were somebody that I didn't know, and now I know you.
Wow. Ooh, that is wild. And what, I mean, really, and other people have talked about similar stories, different from the specifics of your story, but similar stories. So, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, you're a believer and you know this mm-hmm. is absolutely true.
Yes.
When people, go ahead.
No, you go.
When people pick up your book, Places in God, an Intimate Guided Tour, and we're speaking with Beryl Witten, what do you hope they take away from reading the book?
I hope that they will marinate in the essence of the book, because this book will penetrate their spirits and break down the old ideas that they have about a vengeful, jealous God.
And you think that's what lots of people think? They have the portrait in their mind of what they were maybe taught as a child?
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, like whatever you learn when you're first in church or whatnot, a lot of times that sticks with you. And I think people think in pictures and they want to know. I think there's that want, I want proof kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I was a little girl, I went to church. I was 3 and 4, and I had to sit with my grandmother and the lady that sat in, I sat in between these two little old ladies. And if I would wiggle, Miss Kirsten would give me a cough drop. And I sat there, and I would wiggle, and she would give me the cough drop every Sunday. But in that church, I knew that there was a God up in heaven, and he was seated in a great big chair. I could see this great wheel in front of him, and he would turn this wheel and make it rain, and he would push buttons and make my mother yell at me. There were all kinds of things that, as a child, in my imagination, sitting there listening to them talk about God, I had me a God sitting up in heaven just waiting, waiting for me to do something.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful because you had a great, great picture in your mind. The book, again, is called Places in God, an Intimate Guided Tour, Beryl Witten. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome, and thanks so much for having me.
All right, we have an abbreviated sort of man cave because I had a lot of you ask me about what happened in this series and what's going on the ice. On the ice! Somebody wanted to know about hockey. What happened with the Rangers? So Game 7, the New York Rangers win the series 4-3. They beat the Carolina Hurricanes 6-2. It just was score after score after score. They started off in the first period and got off to a 2-0 lead, added another goal in the second period, so you get it. The third period, they're already up 4-0 before finally Carolina scores, but they just didn't have enough oomph to get over the hump. And good for the Rangers that they find themselves there, because you have playoff hockey Yes, playoff hockey. I've actually mentioned it here on these airwaves because too many of you have asked me about it, right? So that's what happens. So now what goes on? Now it's the New York Rangers versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. That should be pretty interesting. On Wednesday that starts, and then they've got a game on Friday. Those two are in New York, and then they switch to my neck of the woods, Tampa, St. Pete area, on Sunday. And that's, of course, the Eastern Conference showdown. In the West, Colorado Avalanche and the Oilers. And that starts on Tuesday. The puck drops there. So they're down to the nitty-gritty. Just a handful of teams left. They're trying to hoist Lord Stanley. How about in the NBA? In the NBA, same thing. It's just a handful of teams that are left, two of them, actually, so even smaller. It's the Warriors, and they've been picked as the favorites over the Celts, so it's Boston and Golden State. The Warriors entered the season actually 10-1 to win the championship if you were to go to a sports book in Las Vegas. And they knocked off the Mavericks easily in five games, so they're at their sixth NBA Finals in the past 8 years, which is crazy. To show you how rare that is, that's only happened by a couple of other franchises. The Bulls, the Lakers, the Celtics, right? So how about that? Boston was a 50-1 long shot in the preseason, right? So that's a pretty big long shot, but they got it together. They had a rhythm throughout the season. So those two teams will square off. That should be a pretty interesting series to watch and see what Boston defensively will put up and what they'll do around the rim to stop Steph Curry and all the various weapons when Golden State finds their rhythm, especially if they start raining threes. Boy, they have been incredibly effective in that department. And in the meantime, Major League Baseball just continues plowing through what still feels like early season. It kicked off. Opening day was in April, and here we are going through the Memorial Day weekend. Pretty soon, before you know it, we'll be at the All-Star break. And I think it's too early. You can see who the superior teams are, like the Dodgers. But And the Brewers, they have 31 wins, and the Dodgers have 35 wins. I'm just picking teams out of thin air that I've been watching highlights of and stuff. Astros and some of the usual suspects, but it's too early to make any of those kinds of predictions. I'm going to introduce you to a couple of people with the military backgrounds to round out our Memorial Day weekend coverage.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
The first of 21 funerals began in Uvalde, Texas on Monday, remembering the victims of the school shooting at Robb Elementary School. the services are happening as more questions are emerging about the police response. State Senator Roland Gutierrez is telling NBC News that there are gaps in the timeline.
I've seen the transcripts, and I've not listened to them. I did see some of the footage of the first seven officers in that school.
Gutierrez adds that from what he saw, those officers pulled back. Leaders in the European Union have reached a compromise to impose a partial oil embargo on Russia. It only covers Russian oil brought by sea. A new package of sanctions will also include an asset freeze as well as a travel ban on individuals. Wall Street was closed on Monday, all due to the Memorial Day holiday. This is USA Radio News. The first Pacific hurricane has made landfall this season. Hurricane Agatha made landfall Monday, 5 miles west of Puerto Angel, as a Category 2 hurricane with maximum sustained winds of 105 miles per hour. Torrential rains and howling winds whipped palm trees and drove tourists as well as residents into shelters. National emergency officials say they assembled a task force of more than 9,300 people for the area, and more than 200 shelters were opened as forecasters warned of dangerous storm surge and flooding from heavy rains. Paul Pelosi, the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, was arrested over the weekend on suspicion of driving under the influence. The Porsche that the 82-year-old was driving was hit by another vehicle in Northern California's wine country. Paul Pelosi, who was released on $5,000 bail, could face misdemeanor charges, including DUI. A spokesperson for Speaker Pelosi says she will not be commenting on the matter. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Americans have the most colorful language in the world, and that vibrant language is our basis for thinking in big ways, new ways, efficient ways, and better ways. Americans have freedom of speech. The pairing of our colorful language and freedom of speech has made us the people and the nation that we are today. Imagine what it would be like not having the freedom to speak our minds, communicate our thoughts and ideas, and hear those from others. Americans have a passion for and yearn for the truth. There are those who want to destroy our freedom and right to hear the truth. The truth is under attack. GCN is under attack. I'm asking our fellow broadcasters and you to rise up and help us defend our right to free speech. Would you like to join us? Please consider visiting SaveGCN.com. Please help us bring you the truth 24 hours per day. I'm Vincent Finelli.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to command an Air Force Special Operations Combat Air Crew? I can say I have, but in my virtual green room, I have somebody who's actually done it, and we are so thrilled to have him with us. Let me tell you, Jason Harris has a resume that is so long and so impressive, it would eat up every second of this interview, so we can't dive into his entire career, but combat 11 times. He's seen things that I'm sure would make the hair on the back of my neck and yours rise right up. 12 and a half years of active duty. He started on the C-130, and he's done so many interesting things, and he just was promoted. And thank goodness we have him in the reserves. We need people like Jason Harris. Jason, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. It's an honor to be here.
So first, let's talk about your new promotion. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was recently honored to assume command of the 905th Air Refueling Squadron at McConnell Air Force Base in Wichita, Kansas. And that unit is comprised of pilots, boom operators, and support team members, where we fly the Air Force's newest tanker, the KC-46, where we get to pass a bunch of gas in the air from our plane to other planes, and we can also receive gas from other airplanes into our airplane to accomplish the mission.
Oh, that's so cool. How dangerous is that? I've seen that like in a Bond movie and it didn't work out too good, I don't think. That is kind of tricky, isn't it?
You know, it's interesting. Like when I get asked that question, because I do it, I'm like, ah, it's no big deal. But then when I start explaining this, I'm like, wait a minute. So here's the deal, man. You're basically going to take an airplane. You're going to fly up. You're going to take a plane that's about 500,000 pounds. And you're going to fly it up to another airplane that's about 400,000 or 500,000 pounds. And you're going to get this little stick that's going to shove into the nose of your aircraft. And you're probably going to be about 20 or so feet, maybe if that, away from this other airplane. And you're going to fly around at about 500 miles an hour while you get gas. It's just easy. It's just another day at the office. Not dangerous at all.
That doesn't sound dangerous. So when you started your career, what was that like when you went into your first C-130? What was that moment like for you?
Well, you know, I think even going before C-130s, Kate, is like pilot training. Pilot training was like one of the most challenging years of my life, because the Air Force says you start on this day and a year later exactly, you will be done. And think of it like this, from pilot training, even when I started flying C-130s, I wasn't legal to rent a car by myself without extra insurance, but the Air Force said, here, kid, here's the keys to a jet. You can fly inches, literally inches away from another jet at 300-400 miles an hour, a couple hundred feet off the ground. Good luck. Have fun. We've trained you well, right? And so it was scary. It was exhilarating. It was anxious. It was exciting. All of that at the same time. And it was so amazing to realize that I had been entrusted to do this mission and work with a crew of people that were so well trained, so professional. And it was such an amazing time.
Did you know when you were a kid that this is what you wanted to do?
Absolutely not. No. What I tell people, Kate, is that I'm number two of my mother's six children, product of three marriages, four fathers to her six children. I grew up a stone's throw away from the Black Panther Party headquarters in Oakland, California. And so growing up, I had never met a pilot that looked like me. And I didn't realize that being a pilot was even a possibility. It wasn't until I went to college that I realized that, oh, wait, there's this thing called being a pilot. And I'd seen them, of course, had flown on airplanes, but it didn't click, right? I mean, it's like, how do you become a pilot? And so it wasn't until college that I was like, wait, these people were teaching me about being a pilot, and it was a possibility. So I was like, well, you know what? I think I'll try that on for size.
And it worked out, and it's still working out for you. And I mentioned that you did, 11 combat missions. What were they like?
Yeah, so I did 11 combat deployments, 470-plus combat sorties, and each one was unique in its own right. You know, I started deploying in 2003, and then my last combat deployment was 2011, and everyone was different. Every time you went out to do a mission, there was something different. You know, I remember one mission and flying into Baghdad, Iraq, and we're sitting there. We had landed, and we're offloading cargo. We're getting ready to unload cargo. And all of a sudden you hear incoming mortar fire, and a mortar lands and it hits a fuel bladder and it just explodes and you see this massive fireball, right? Like, and that was just kind of like, oh, that's another day at the office. No big deal. We didn't get hit. Let's go ahead and button up the airplane. Let's get out of here and go back to where we got to go next. Right. So,
wow.
Everything was so unique.
Yeah. No kidding. So you take all this experience and you're a professional speaker, and I can just see how you would just mesmerize an audience. And you have a lot to also offer as far as teaching, when it comes to being a leader, when it comes to imposter syndrome. You know, the story you told about your younger, you had no idea, then look what happens to you and how you can do it and just went through and you didn't think about it. So tell us about your speaking career.
Yeah, so I was teaching at the Air Force Academy, and a good friend of mine invited me to come to Toastmasters and then got me involved with the National Speakers Association. And we started talking, and he started asking me about these different stories that I would tell. And over the course of time, I realized that there was some power in those stories to help other people based on some of the things that I struggled with and based on some of the things that I experienced in leadership roles as well as in followership roles. And so I took those lessons of the amazing people that I worked with in the Air Force, and I began to translate those stories for businesses, for associations, to help them when it comes to their frontline employees, middle management, C-suite team members, and how do you get a high-performance team to work together to create a culture that's built on commitment, accountability, and most importantly, trust.
I was just going to get to that. So trust is definitely your thing, and that's definitely something that I see that's lacking in a lot of cultures, whether it's somebody in mid-management, C-suite, or wherever it is. How important is trust?
Trust is everything. I mean, you know, they say trust is everything. It's the only thing. You know, when we go out there to do the mission, I have to trust that young person in the back. And I want you to picture this, Kate. Picture you have a 17, 18, 19-year-old kid or young person fresh out of high school. They've entered the military, and now they're a loadmaster in the back of that airplane, and they're responsible for more than 80% of that aircraft. And if they don't do it right, then not only will the mission not get completed, people can possibly lose their lives. And the only way that we can make that mission happen, the only way we can execute what we do every single day is by trusting people. But you don't get to the level of trust that you need if you don't have the right training in place and you don't have the right processes in place to then allow you to be able to trust that person. And yes, we trust and verify. However, if you've got the right training, the right process, you know that you can absolutely unequivocally trust that young person to execute the mission.
So that's obviously something that has to happen or might be lacking in some companies, or they're working on it. You hear the word mentorship thrown around a lot, but I don't know that they always know how to implement it. And I'm not attacking companies, because there's some corporations that do a wonderful job of it. And of course, there's always the search, the mission to search for the right. You understand missions. It's the search for the right fit. How do we do this? How do we implement that? How do you implement that? How do you get to that culture of trust? How do you start to work on that if you really feel like you're maybe at ground zero or you have a lack of trust across the board?
Yeah, I think it starts with just assessing the programs that you have, Kate, right? What I tell companies that I work with, different clients, is, see, you guys have obviously hired the right people. And a lot of times we think maybe we didn't hire the right people. No, you hired the right people. But when is the last time that you evaluated what your training program looks like? And a lot of times they go, oh, well, we just do OJT. Well, let's start with the onboarding program. When's the last time you evaluated what that initial onboarding training program looks like? In the military, that's called our basic training. That allows us to speak a common language. That allows us to understand the common culture, right? To understand the ethos of who we are as an organization, as a team. And then after you reevaluate the training, then what does that process look like? And if we just start there, and so what happens, and my wife and I, we talk about this all the time when we have these various encounters in organizations. You know, when's the last time you called somewhere and you had a phone call, Kate, and you're like calling a medical facility or a hotel or something, and you want to be upset with that young person or that person, whoever they are and however they old they are, but then you step back and you go, wait a minute, maybe they haven't been properly trained. Maybe they don't have a process that supports that training so that every time they get on that phone or every time they deal with somebody at that desk, that they do it well and they do it with a level of commitment, a level of accountability. So that's where that implementation starts at, is just evaluating what your programs look like, and then we can begin to build from there.
Yes, yeah, so starting right at the beginning, because if you don't have it at the beginning, I could go through whatever program it is, but if there's no accountability, that's a great one. No accountability, well, how do we know what's happening? And if I don't have a routine and I don't know this is standard operating procedure, which you understand that, if you don't have the SOP, what's going to happen, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, as an airline pilot, people are amazed when I say, Kate, is that I have shown up to the airplane, never having flown to that destination, never having met that fellow pilot before a day in my life. And guess what? There's a 200,000-pound airplane, and there's 200 people in the back of that airplane, and they trust that we will get them there safely. And the company trusts that we will execute that job safely. Why and how can we do that? It's because they've provided us with the right training, and they provided us with the right processes by way of a standard operating procedure, by way of checklists, and other things that allows us to implement that training every single time.
Yeah, that's the key. All right, Jason, so if people want to find you when your feet are on the ground anyway, where can they do that?
They can absolutely find me. My website is nofailtrust.com. If you go to nofailtrust.com, you'll find a little bit of her information about me. And if you want to email me, feel free to email me at jason@nofailtrust.com. And you can also send me a text, call at 719-203-7257.
All right. People are going to be calling you for rides. I know it. Come on, take me up. I want to open that big bird. It was just wonderful to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's a pleasure and honor, and I appreciate you so much.
feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pauti Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Here's a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they'd be? Answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who have prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with empty store shelves. Is yours? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits. At least one for each member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order will ship fast and arrive discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now, before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Bruce Bastian joins us. He's written a book called 13 Months in the Bush in Vietnam in 1968. And Bruce, first, thanks for your service. You and I had a wonderful off-air conversation. I think your book takes us on a really interesting journey, and one that you don't hear much about. And some of that is the funny stuff, the camaraderie, what it was really like to be in the middle of this situation that you found yourself in and day out. So thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks, Kate, for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So let's talk about what happened. So how did you end up in the situation where you went to Vietnam, and then what was that like initially in the first beginning moments of it when you first were deployed?
Well, initially I was in college and not having any goals or reason for being there, and I wasn't doing very well. And I joined the Marine Corps simply so I could find a purpose. And so at that time, of course, they were looking for people to be in the infantry, and that's where I ended up. Going over to Vietnam, even though we'd heard quite a bit about it and thought we knew something about it, it was quite a shock. It wasn't anything like we had really thought. And when real world gets in the way, you can be surprised quite a bit.
And what happened is, speaking of real world, I mean, you had people of all kinds of different backgrounds, and you're a kid, and all different kinds of races and everything you can imagine in this environment, but yet you felt that strong sense of incredible camaraderie, didn't you?
Well, I did, and I think all of us did, actually. Anytime you go through something, some kind of experience with a bunch of people, and you're sharing the load of what's there, you grow together, and you begin to support each other, and you become friends. And it doesn't matter where you started out. Once you're there, you're all together, and you're going through the same thing, sharing the same problems or the same dangers, and you can't help but begin to have friends and close friends.
And your job every day and the guys that you're with is really right to kill the bad guys.
Well, that was the purpose. We were there for one purpose, and that was to win the war. I can talk about that later on because that it didn't turn out that they had any plan to do that. But anyway, that'll be later.
Okay, so one of the things that you said to me is, you know, of course we know, like you said, there were things that were ugly and horrific and violent and all that kind of stuff. Of course, we know that. But you say that there was a lot of fun and funny things that happened with these friendships and that you had a lot of tediousness. And what did you do when, you know, you were bored? So tell us some of the fun stuff.
Well, you have to remember when we talk about what's funny now today, in hindsight, looking back, at the time, it wasn't particularly funny. In fact, it could have been fairly dangerous. It could have been fairly scary. And I have one of my favorite stories is what happened at a place called Lang Co. There was a hill that we were on, stationed above that, and the idea was to run our patrols down the hill and down, protect the bridges along the Highway 1. And it turned out that a friend of mine, Jenkins, and I were stationed at the very entrance to the top of the hill, where if the bad guys were going to come up and get us, they had to go through us first. And we were the only ones there at the edge of the jungle where it went down the hill. And so it was just Junkins and I. We had to alternate watches. And he was sitting out in front on his watch, and I was in the poncho tent trying to get some sleep. And I heard him suddenly say, "Bastion, come out here, please." And I thought, he sounds scared. I better go out and look and see what's going on. And when I went out there, I looked, and he was pointing at this, up into the sky, at this orange glowing parachute that seemed to be jumping around the sky and scared the heck out of us. We didn't know what that was. And so he said, "I'm going to shoot that son of a gun." And he fired off a few rounds right into it, and I saw the tracers. It looked like he hit it. So I told him he got it. But nothing happened. He just stood there. It just sat there jumping around in the sky. We didn't know what it was going to do. And we're thinking about that. And, of course, when he shot off the rounds, that disturbed some people on the other side of the hill, and we could hear them coming to see what was going on. And while we were waiting for them to get to us, we noticed that the clouds in the sky were breaking apart, and it was showing a lot more night, open sky. And at the same time, the moon had risen over the mountains out in the horizon there. And what we had actually shot at was the top half of the moon that was just coming up over the mountains. And I thought we had hit it. So Jenkins was really relieved at knowing what his dangerous foe was. And so he was beginning to relax just a little bit. But in the meantime, the guys came around from the side of the hill, and they wanted to know what was going on. And I didn't want to tell them that Jenkins had shot at the moon. That would be stupid. So I told them that Jenkins heard something. And the lieutenant got really mad at us, and he said, "Don't you know that if you hear something, you throw a grenade at it rather than shooting at it, because otherwise they're going to know where you're at." And the funny part is now Jenkins is so now relieved that he knew what he was shooting at that he blurted out, "Well, yep, now the moon know where I'm at." So in hindsight, it's pretty funny, but at the time it was fairly scary.
Yeah, oh, I bet it was. And you know, and you think about, like, where did you sleep? What did you eat? What about some of these battles? And you talk about that in your book.
Well, Well, I do. I try to cover just about everything we did, where we lived, the little poncho tents, and where we slept, and what we ate, and the good things that happened to us, and just the mundane bad things about getting diarrhea or getting plugged up or what you would do about those things. And so it wasn't all bad blood and guts and gore and fighting. You're there for 13 months. Lots of things happen, just like they would in normal life.
Yeah, and when you look back on this, like you say, things just happen like in normal life. But what else do you want the reader to know when they think about getting into this war and what happened and all of that? What, how do you sum that up?
Well, one of the reasons I wrote it, there were several different reasons, of course, but I wanted to explain that the military and our government went from, at least in our view, from being the good guy and trying to be protectors of freedom and democracy, to becoming, it became an unending, disastrous quest for the power and the money and the control. And in hindsight, I happen to think that it continues to this day. But when we began that, it was considered the military and the government were considered the good guys, and they were trying to protect us. And it turns out they didn't have a plan. They didn't know what they were doing. We didn't do anything that was worthwhile over there. The guys over there did what was required of them, and they did it in an exceptional manner. But we didn't keep a hill. If we took the hill, we didn't keep a village. If we kept the village, or if we took the village, and there was no rhyme or reason for being there. We weren't accomplishing anything. And that was one of the things I point out in the last part of the book.
Yeah, yeah, which again is what's so interesting about your book. You take us through some fun times, what was tough, and then ultimately, you know, what was the quest when you were there. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
Well, I'd like people to realize there was a balance to the being there. I mean, I think the public has an image that a skewed image that says it was nothing but blood and guts and gore and fighting and terrible situation. And of course it was that at certain times, but you're there a whole year. You can't possibly be there a whole year without having your normal activities going on, your normal friendships, the fun times, the good times. So that was one thing. And then I really wanted to point out that the role of happenstance in being there, you know, deciding who gets killed or who gets wounded or who becomes sick or who has to be medevaced out of there or who, like me, happened to skate through with no problems whatsoever, it's just a matter of happenstance. There's the role of luck and chance. And it doesn't have anything to do with what you learn in class or how fast you can duck and cover. It's just a matter of luck. You either get it or you don't.
Perfect place to end this. Get this book, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, 13 Months in the Bush in Vietnam, 1968. Bruce Bastian, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Hey guys, why settle for poor quality Powdy Arco that's sold by stores and online resellers when you can get Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea at drinksupertea.com or 818-965-9113. The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea is only available at drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.